All right, guys. Oh my God, you're going to love this conversation. So this conversation is with John Ensley. And let me tell you, he was dropping some knowledge when it comes to infinite banking insurance and all that great stuff. You have to listen, keep your ears on, pay attention, go grab a pen and a pad, because you're going to have to really write down some great stuff here, because he talks about how to start these policies. Why should we have these policies? I mean, everybody's individualized, right? But what I love about it is that he is really informing you on what it means to be your own bank. As you guys know, it is a little scary out there with these banks. These banks are acting a fool right now. And I want you to get some knowledge, gain some knowledge, and get this going. I think you're going to love this episode. Let's do this. What's up, party people? This is Nina Perez, and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. I am so excited that you're here. I freaking say that every time, and it's because I'm always excited, right? So as you guys know, I have a lot of energy, so I'm coming at you. But I want to thank you guys so much for everything that you do. So make sure you like, share, subscribe, all that great stuff, because we are at over 100,000 downloads, and it's because of you and the amazingness of who you are and how you keep pouring into this community. And as you know, I go around this amazing planet finding the best humans I can find to come on here to grow, challenge, and transform your thinking. I found one for y'all. I sure did. His name is John Ensley. I am super stoked he's here. He is a leader in the financial planning revolution. John's mission is to help you take control of your money, your lifestyle, your retirement plan. Like, hello, people, listen up, okay? After experiencing a significant loss during the Great Recession, he became obsessed with finding safe and predictable ways to save and create wealth. And I want to make sure you guys get in tune. So grab a pen and pad, guys, because we're going to get into this, okay? He is the president of the J. Ensley Financial, and he brings his expertise in here, right? So we are going to talk about all of this amazing stuff that you probably never even heard of. So I want to make sure that you guys are paying attention, all right? So join us in this insightful discussion, because we are going to explore a lot of great things in financial planning. How are you, John? Welcome to the show.
I am awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Nina. I'm super excited about this.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I'm so glad you're here. I have a really cool community. And I know that, you know, even just a little bit that me and you have touched on was really impactful to me. Like, it really made me pay attention. So I'm really excited to have this conversation. So before I always get started, John, I like people to get to know you, right? To get to know the kind of guy you are. So my question is, who are you? Who are you, John? I gave your bio, but I want to know about you. Who are you, John?
Wow, what a great question. I sometimes refer to myself as, if you think about life as a big laboratory, I get to be both the mad scientist and the rat, right? That's kind of my approach to life. I think it's a great way to describe myself.
That's awesome.
Life is so exciting. There's so much to learn. There's so much to experience. And I just, I love it all. Aside from that, I'm a U.S. Army veteran, a dad, a grandpa, a husband. I have all the roles that we all have in life as well. So I guess
that's, so
I guess
that's awesome. How I'd sum it up. Well, thank you for your service too. My husband is also a veteran of the Army, and I love you guys. You guys are amazing. So that's really, really great. And I know I introduced a little bit in the beginning, but I'd like you to dive a little bit deep into what happened during the recession. And you're talking about 2008, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So 2008 was a tough, tough time, John. That was a tough time. I mean, I lost my house, I lost my cars, I lost everything. So I definitely know the pain of that, but I want you to tell me your story. What happened there? What was going on?
So the lead in to the 2008 recession was, of course, the one before that in the early 2000s with the dot-com bubble bursting. When I got out of the service, I happened to be in the right place at the right time, and I went to work for a company, and they had an employee stock ownership plan. And this was in the mid to late 90s. And so it's the build up to the tech bubble. And of course, they were going to do an IPO. They were going to go public. We were all going to be just wildly wealthy with these stock options that we had. And then, of course, the bubble burst and the whole thing fizzled and it didn't happen. So that kind of I left that company with a little bit of money left in that employee stock ownership plan. And so my next endeavor after doing some reading and some research was a real estate, a subdivision, a development. And of course, now we're into the early 2000s. And so I bought a small piece of property in Southwest Washington State and was subdividing that. And my plan was to build spec homes on each of these lots. And at that time, the real estate bubble was in expansion mode. So all my appraisals, it was all going to be amazing, right? Excuse me. So I'm about halfway through building the first spec home in 2008, when everything just started tanking. And admittedly, I made some big mistakes. I really didn't know what I was doing, which was part of the problem. And so I started borrowing money to try and finish the project before everything completely deflated. It didn't work, right? The project imploded. I ended up selling everything off and pretty much got wiped out. I also had a day job at that time in sales, industrial sales. And so simultaneously, all of this real estate investment just tanked. And the Great Recession then, you know, my income dropped by about 50% because all my customers quit buying stuff. And, you know, so it was just this compounding thing. And then, you know, on the personal side too, that all of that stress, I think just divorce, teenage kids having some issues and just a lot. It was really dark days, right? Just super dark days. So looking back on it today, I'm super grateful for it actually, because that was what I refer to as my wake up call. Mm-hmm. And and when I say that, it really was the catalyst to get me to start becoming aware. That's the way I describe it. I became aware finally of the world around me, and started studying and reading and learning everything I could learn, both financially and personally. It was quite a journey there for several years as I kind of recovered from that and became aware and learned some things about the world, about life, about money, and so forth.
How long do you think it took from, you know, from the bubble bursting to becoming aware? Like, because you said a lot of stuff went on, right? It wasn't just becoming aware. I mean, you had a lot, you had a divorce going on, you had teenage kids. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a tough time. I was very blessed that my marriage survived that, but that was a very tough time. So how long was it that you said, okay, this is not working. I have to do something.
Yeah, I would say that the depths of the downside were probably, you know, between 2000, maybe late 2007 into 2009. Mm-hmm. And then it started the upswing, you know, and I think by the time I started my financial practice in 2012, so I think it was really what, about a 5-year period there from 2007 mm-hmm. to 2012. Mm-hmm. And of course the journey continues, you know, I haven't anything, but it definitely took a different trajectory, starting in 2012 and, you know, a year or two before that.
You know, it's pretty impressive though, right? Because you lost a lot, right? Personally and business wise and whatever. And in 5 years, you now are opening your own financial business, right? Mm-hmm. How did that feel? Did you feel like, okay, this is why I'm asking. I think that a lot of people think they have to have all of their shit together before they start something, right? And the truth is you don't, right? You just have to know enough. You just have to know enough, right, to do it. And so I'm wondering what kind of, this is probably going to get a little bit on the personal touchy side, but what kind of like imposter syndrome did you face? Did you face any imposter syndrome starting your financial business after all the trauma, right? Because that causes trauma. That causes trauma. It causes scarring. It causes shame. It causes a lot of things that a lot of us don't like to touch on because we're entrepreneurs, for sure. So we keep moving, right? Yep. But what was those things that kept hitting you at that time?
Well, so it was actually quite a feat to overcome mm-hmm. some of that. So coming out of this whole thing, I was still dealing with the aftermath of it. So I'm just, you know, during this whole process, I had learned about the the infinite banking concept on a webinar one night. Some advisor mentioned it, and so that sent me down that path, reading some books and learning more about it. And so I was curious, and so I set up my own policies, and they were actually contributing to getting myself out of the pit that I was in. But when I started my practice, I wasn't quite out of it, right? So there was this sort of imposter syndrome, right? This IRS issues from it I was dealing with, and you know, all this kind of stuff. So there was definitely that, well, you know, who am I? Why should anybody listen to me? But yet the information about bank on yourself or infinite banking or using properly designed life insurance in the way we're using it, just nobody was talking about it in terms of financial advisors, right? I'd been to many financial advisors over the years, and nobody had ever told me anything remotely similar to this. I ended up finding it on a webinar in the middle of the night. So I felt I had an equal amount of passion to share this message and help people put this tool in their financial toolkit as I did the imposter syndrome or feeling
that's
like
awesome.
I was inadequate or not up to the task. But it, you know, on some days one outweighed the other, and on other days,
of course,
a bit of a roller coaster. But you know, we just kept plodding along.
Yeah, I love that. And the reason I ask that is because I know that I have a lot of entrepreneurs and leaders that listen to my show, and you know, we all of us run into this imposter syndrome thing, and some of us are working it out as we're teaching or as we're leading others, and that is okay. And I think that's one thing that people get hung up on is that they want to start maybe doing what you're doing with infinite banking. Maybe they want to know more, but they don't know enough yet. So they're just not going to wait. They're going to wait till they're perfect or know everything. And that's not how it works. So I want you to touch on that now on the infinite banking thing, because you mentioned it. And I really don't think a lot of us know too much about this, right? So I wish we did though, John. I wish we did. If I knew more about infinite banking now in my 50s that I did in my 20s, oh my God, right? Oh my God. It sucks, John, when we're not 20 anymore and we learn all this stuff. So for those who are listening, can you just like briefly tell us what infinite banking is? And then I want you to kind of touch on how people can get involved or what does it mean or how people can work with you, that kind of stuff. But let's at least break down what infinite banking is.
Sure. And so that, there's a good bit of information out there online, some of it accurate, some of it not so accurate. So I'll explain it the way I explain it. And so infinite banking or bank on yourself is another term, cash flow banking. There's 100 different things that people call it, but it's using specially structured life insurance contracts as a wealth building and financing tool. So the way I describe this is all of us save, borrow, and invest. We all do those three things throughout our lives. We save our money, we borrow money for various purposes. We all have a need for finance at some level, and we invest for the future. And so we have conventional systems. We're used to doing that. We call them banks, right?
Right.
And whoever has your investment accounts or your IRAs or your 401ks, that's a bank, right? Those are banks, even though they don't look like the banks on the street corner. So what we're doing is using the unique features of these life insurance contracts to create an alternative platform for saving, borrowing, and investing, using the insurance industry as opposed to the banking industry as the platform for that. So that's the way I describe it. It's doing the same things we're already going to do. We're going to save, borrow, and invest, but doing it in an alternative system using specially designed life insurance contracts as the engine that keeps it running.
Okay. Are these like a whole life policies? Is that what that is? And they just have like special write-ups or something that you put, right? To make this policy work in your favor, right?
That's correct. So they're whole life contracts, and we structure them with a couple of things, but one in particular, a unique rider called a paid up additions rider. And this is what generates these policies are designed for rapid cash accumulation. So they build up what's called cash value very, very quickly compared to a whole life policy without these riders, as much as 40 times faster than most types of policies. So it's the way the policies are designed. They build up cash very quickly. And then we can use that accumulating cash in a very unique way as a source of financing.
That's so cool. And, you know, it's kind of, frustrating, I think, or a little disheartening, I think, for most people that don't know about this, because banks, this is how banks have been getting their money for a long time. So banks and all of that have been using the system forever, ever, right? And now it's mm-hmm. us, you know, regular folk that are now really kind of finding out about this. Let me ask you this. I'm like trying to grapple it all in my mind and like fix it in my mind, right? Because this is something I've been very interested in and something I'd like to know more about because I really do want to do this myself for myself and my family and all that. Mm-hmm. So, when I think about that, because I'm, you know, trying to get a little bit more into what's happening in the world, you know, with, you know, politics and all that and finances and all that kind of stuff, which is a big animal to try to learn. It just is. Although the banking system is making me a little bit worried, you know, like it's scaring me a little bit. And I'm like, it's time to look for alternative ways to do this. And I don't know enough about crypto to get into that. Right. So I'm just wondering, if somebody's listening to you right now and they're thinking, man, I really need an alternative. And this John guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about, right? Does somebody still need to have their bank, like a bank account? Is that something, or can you shift everything to this banking system? I'm just trying to understand that.
Right. You're still going to use your regular bank account for your day-to-day needs, right? You're still okay. going to have your debit card. And if you still use checks, some people still use checks. You're going to have a checkbook and right. So you're still going to have your bank accounts and you're still going to use your bank the way you probably do now. I think the real difference comes is when we talk about saving, borrowing, and investing, right?
Okay,
those
got
are the
it.
Functions mm-hmm. where we're mm-hmm. going to shift to this alternative system. So instead of building up cash in a savings account or CD or the myriad of other banking tools that are out there, we're going to accumulate cash in a properly designed whole life insurance policy. Once we build that up a little bit, instead of going to the bank or the finance company or the car dealer or whoever it is to borrow money for the things that we borrow for, we're going to turn to that policy again and borrow against our policy. Using what are called policy loans to meet that need for finance.
Yeah, that's smart. Basically, you're borrowing from yourself and then paying yourself back. And if you're smart, paying yourself back with interest, right? Mm-hmm. To grow the money in the policy as you move forward so that it could keep accumulating. Am I correct?
Close. Okay. Close. But for clarity's sake, what we're really doing is we're borrowing the insurance company is using the policy as collateral. So okay. we're borrowing directly from the insurance company and they're using the death benefit in the policy as the collateral. So in mm-hmm. other words, if you die and you don't pay the loan back, then they'll offset it from the death benefit. So
okay.
they're secure. And they use the cash value you have in your policy as the limit of what you can borrow.
Okay.
Okay. And so because of that unique structure that only life insurance offers, you can borrow money from the insurance company at very, very competitive rates. And when you repay the insurance company, they're using the policy as collateral. And so as you repay, you have complete control over the repayment program because ultimately the death benefit is their security. So they're mm-hmm. not hounding you to make payments. You can pay it any way you want to over uh-huh. any amount of time. And the other unique thing is called non-direct recognition. And this is when I borrow against the policy and then I'm repaying back to the insurance company. The values in my policy are growing in the background as if I didn't borrow the money.
Okay.
So I'm continuing to accrue growth in my policy while I've borrowed this money as if that borrowed money was still there. And it's called non-direct recognition. And it works because of this unique structure where we're using the policy as collateral and borrowing from the insurance company. We're essentially, we are part of the insurance company's investment portfolio as a borrower. And there's a number of unique benefits in that relationship that make it a very powerful way to finance things mm-hmm. for the things we need to finance.
So like an insurance policy, like a banking system, right? You can have more than one checking account, saving account, whatever. Can you have more than one policy?
Yeah, absolutely. I've met people that have upwards of 40 policies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, over their lifetime. So yes, you can have multiple
What is their name and address? I would like that. That's great. Okay. So you can have more than one policy. Okay. So Do you mind giving us a little example, John, if we walk through a little bit of an example? Like, say somebody comes to you right now. We could probably just use me. Say Nina comes to you. John, I would like to have one of these policies. Don't know crap about it. What do I do? Can you walk me through that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So my process is several steps. So when someone approaches me with some interest in the concept, we have kind of a get acquainted, you know, a short get acquainted call, find out kind of really what they're looking for and whether it's a good fit. So that's the first thing. I always kind of tongue in cheek say that this concept can work for anyone, but it's certainly not for everyone.
Right.
So we want to make sure there's a good fit. And then the second thing I do is I go through what I call a key concepts overview. So there's about a half a dozen key concepts that I think are super important to understand. And then you can't really talk about exactly how your policy should be designed until you've got a grasp on those key concepts.
Right. Okay.
So then we move on to, now we're going to gather some information. What does Nina want to accomplish? What are your goals? What are your objectives? What are your fears, concerns, aspirations, right? We want to kind of capture all of that and what resources you have and you're working with. And then with that data, now we can kind of move to the last step, which is, here's what your policy would look like. Here's how we design it.
Okay.
Here's what you can do with it. So it's very individualized, right? There's no, I call it a cookie cutter approach. We don't have a cookie cutter approach to this. It's every individual's is going to be structured a little bit differently based on their unique goals, objectives, situation, et cetera.
Got it. Okay, got it. And is there like when you open up a policy for someone, because I'm pretty sure these are questions people are possibly thinking of too. Like, I'm going to invest in this policy. Is there a a determined amount of time in which they cannot touch that money? So when they get the policy, is it like 90 days, 1 year? Like, what does that look like?
No, there's really no determined time before they can access their cash value in the form of policy loans. However, it's where the time really comes in is in how quickly someone can fund the policy.
Got it.
Right. So if somebody's in a situation where they have a lump sum and they want to drop that into the policy on day one, then they're going to have access to a significant amount of that lump sum fairly quickly once the policy is issued, maybe a week or two. If it's someone who's more in a position where they're building it up on a monthly basis and they're putting so much a month in, then it may take a period of months for that to build up to a point that you have some access to it.
Okay.
So there's no set rule that says you can't touch it for 6 months or 9 months. It's really situational for each person.
Awesome. Okay. So what is your advice right now to anybody who's listening who maybe hasn't heard about this, or they feel like they're too old for this, or maybe too young for this, right? Because people feel different things. So give me some advice that you would give them, since you know this field, right? You know this field, you know what this is about. What would you say to people mostly that want to know more or want to get involved in this?
I think the biggest roadblocks that I see out there is the world we live in today is a lot of people out there just don't know what to believe. Right.
If
you go on YouTube, there's all kinds of people talking about infinite banking now. And sometimes it sounds like snake oil. Sometimes it sounds too good to be true. You just don't know what to believe. And of course, you got to remember they're all marketing messages, right? The people who make their money on commissions when they manage your investments in the market want you to believe that infinite banking is bad so that you keep your money with them.
That's correct.
So the infinite bankers and the bank on yourselfers are marketing their stuff as well. So they want you to think that stuff is bad. The reality is that a properly designed whole life insurance policy or policies should be an integrated part of every family's financial plan. It's not all or nothing, right? It should integrate with the other things that you're doing as your safe money bucket, if you will. Or this piece you have control over, or this piece you have the ability to use as financing so that you're not out using the banks and finance companies for that. So
can we touch on, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. My biggest advice is tune the marketers out, including me, right? Tune out the marketing and learn about it. You can pick up books. There's a number of different books out there to learn about the concept, and ideally connect with someone like me that will walk you through a process like what I just described. That's not going to shove the contract down your or the concept down your throat, but is going to walk you through learning and understanding the concept so that you can decide whether it's a fit for you. Because that's ultimately what we have to do. Tune out the marketers and rationally analyze things from our point of view and decide what's a good decision for us individually.
That's really great. The people who are listening right now, my audience, I'm just wondering, is this something where they can just call you, John? Is it a free call? Is it something that gets charged when they call? Like, how does that work when somebody wants to know more about this?
Yeah, so I actually have a domain out there that's jumponwithjohn.com. And if you hit that site, it will take you to an area where you can book a 30-minute strategy session directly in my calendar. It's free. There's no charge for that. And the whole idea of that call is just to have a very casual conversation. And so that someone can understand what I do and what I offer, and I can understand what their needs are, and we can decide if there's a possible fit there or not. And, you know, maybe there's not.
Jumponwithjohn.com?
Jumponwithjohn.com.
Okay, awesome. But before I let you go, you'd mentioned something that made me think. You said, you know, people might want to put their money in a safe place, right? Mm-hmm. So can you just touch on that a little bit? Is it safe? And the reason I ask that is because I just feel like the world is a little bit crooked right now, right? And so it feels sometimes like our money isn't safe. That's what it feels like sometimes. And when I start to dig into a little bit of finances and banking systems and all that kind of stuff, I'm like, this doesn't feel safe at all, you know, when it comes to banking. So can you touch on that a little bit? What you mean by safe?
Yes. So let's put safety in context. I often joke with clients that they're, you know, we really can't hedge against asteroid strikes or alien
invasions,
right? So there's very no true. Such thing as 100% safe, right?
Things right, of
can
course.
Happen, world wars, you know, whatever. All bets are off when some of those things happen. However, we can go historically and we can kind of establish a benchmark for safety. And I often will compare the banking industry with the insurance industry. And the insurance industry is a vast subject. So I'm referring to really a handful of very solid life insurers that we can look at historically. So the banking industry is full of failures, right? We've had a Great Depression in our country, a couple of massive recessions, and we saw hundreds of bank failures. And even just last year, we saw some pretty significant failures, right?
Right.
So banking as a model, right? A bank takes in a dollar in deposits and they leverage that dollar into basically 10 times. And they loan that money, which they created out of thin air. They loan that money to other people to do whatever they're going to do with it. So banks are in the business of taking risk. They loan money to borrowers in the expectation of getting paid, and they start to fail when their risks don't pan out. And we've seen that over and over and over and over again in banking for a couple thousand years, really. Insurance companies, not all, but the types that I'm talking about, insurance companies are built to mitigate risk. It's a totally different model. They have actuaries on their staff that can, you know, predict all sorts of things. Using tables that go back hundreds of years, you know, it's said that an actuary can't tell you when you're going to die, but they can tell you exactly how many people out of 100 just like you are going to die, right?
Oh, wow.
And so that's actuarial science, where uncannily accurate over the big spectrum. And so if we look at that, a lot of the companies that I work with, for instance, I'll use one company as an example that was founded in 1905. And one of the benchmarks we look for is in a mutual life insurance company, when they perform better than expected, they pay a dividend to the policy owners, to us as the policy owners.
Okay.
And so this particular company has paid dividends to their policy owners every single year since they were founded in 1905. And so if you put that in perspective, 1905, right? They have World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, every crisis, recession, war, everything in the last 120 years almost, this company not only survived the Great Depression, for instance, but they performed better than expected and paid dividends to their policy owners during the Great Depression. There's a great book by a guy named Benjamin Roth called The Great Depression: A Diary. And it's an attorney in Youngstown, Ohio, that documented all through the Great Depression, kind of what the conditions and a lot of financial information. And he mentions a number of times that professionals like himself, an attorney, got through the depression because they could still get cash out of their cash value life insurance policies when they couldn't get any money out of a bank. And it literally got them through the crisis. So we're talking about two completely different business models, two completely different platforms. So from a safety standpoint, the way I approach it is if a company like the one I just mentioned, after 120 years of not just surviving, but thriving even through crisis times, if suddenly they are failing, I don't know what's going on in the world, but it probably doesn't really matter where I keep money at that point, right? So to me, it's the safest option, that gives me the most control and the most privacy. And and that's why I gravitated that direction.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing this knowledge with all my peeps, because I think this is it's just something I wish more of us knew and knew who to trust, John, because at to your point, you go on like say YouTube and you punch that in and you will have hundreds of things, but then you don't know who to trust, right? Who's actually saying the
Yes.
right thing or who actually knows how to do all the underwriting or who actually knows how to add this to your whole life insurance policy. And then you'll get people to say, do not do this, only do life, term life or whatever. It's like,
Right.
yeah, like when I got my term life in insurance policy like 20 years ago, whatever it was, 15, 20 years ago, I had heard about this. But they told me absolutely not, do not do that. That's, only do term. I'm so pissed off. I listened, but I went, I am really pissed off because I've invested a lot, I've invested all my money in that, right? I did all my term, and it was very convincing. And of course, like, oh, it's a low premium. Okay, great.
Right.
And now I'm like, damn, that's, 15, 20 years. I could have been just pouring it into my own banking system. Anyway, all of that to say, John, I know hoponwithjohn.com is one, but is there other places where people can maybe follow you? Do you have content out there? Can people follow you? Can people, hop on and see what's going on? Like, that kind of stuff. Where can people get more info?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website, jayinsley.com, is a great way to connect with me and learn more about what I do. And also you can link to my calendar from there as well,
Okay.
to get a conversation started. There's quite a few podcasts out there that that I've been on that you can
Great.
check out as well, in addition to yours, Nina. And then of course social media. So I've got a Facebook presence and LinkedIn presence, and you can find me on all those platforms as well.
Okay. Under just John Ainsley or?
Yeah, just my name, John Inslee, or my
Okay.
company name, J. Inslee Financial.
All right. John, what a beautiful story, right? To go from all of that struggle and heartache and all of that, and then transition into helping others, right? This is what the world is about. Learn as you
For
go and
sure.
then help someone else, Thank you so much, John, for being here and pouring into our community. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Nina. I really
This
appreciate
was
the opportunity.
so good. Thank you. Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us. I told you John was going to drop some stuff on you guys. So make sure that you connect with him because I'm telling you, we really need to change the way we think, right? We have been programmed to think a certain way. It is time to shift the way we think and start to take ownership for what you have and what you want to create and do in the world. And some of you may be thinking of this and going, oh, maybe I'm too old. No, you're not. Check it out. Go talk to John. You are not too old to, if you're alive and you're breathing, you're good. Let's just talk to John and find out what that means, right? Because I think that if you have more power, more money, more ownership, you can then create what it is you really want to create and really impact the world the way you want to impact the world, right? So you can start creating things or saving for your retirement, or God only knows what your deal is. But what I want you to have is power, and knowledge in action is power. So take this knowledge, put it in action, and gain some power. Thank you guys for being here. This is Nina Perez. This is Straight Talk, no sugar added. I love you. Until next time.